Well, hello everyone. This is our 8th class in our Breakthrough Results course. And it is our second to last class, and it's the last class where we're really going to do content. So I want to start off tonight's class with a sort of check-in with where all of us are. Most of the people in this course, in fact, virtually everyone, is taking it remotely. About 20 of you out there, if you're curious about the rest of you. And I am sure what's happened is that you've listened to some of these lectures, and some of you have listened to all of them, and you've assimilated some stuff, and you've gotten some new ideas, and it's helped you begin to look at your body and look at health and look at life in different ways. And you may have applied a thing or two here and there, but unless you are a very rare bird, and don't feel bad if you're not this rare bird, because even this particular rare bird also has something they need to look at, you haven't systematically integrated this course because it's life, and let's be real. We all have life. Life has its concerns. It's got work. It's got relationships. It's got all sorts of things that demand our time and attention. And we have this background sense in our brains that I should do something to be healthier or more fit. The word should is one of the most unmotivating and disempowering words in the English language because essentially what should means is what I want to do and the natural momentum of my life are both somehow wrong, and I would be a better person if there was something within me that let me interrupt my own seeming psychological nature and push myself in directions more effectively that are against my nature, and I'm now lacking and feeling bad that I don't have that. That's what should means, and it's an abysmal term. So probably you have shoulded yourself over the course of this course, and if you haven't done it consciously, you've probably done it subconsciously. You've said to yourself, I really should be more conscious of breathing. I really should think about introducing a meditation program. I should eat better. I should go to the gym. Well, first of all, let's throw all that away. You've participated in this the way that you participated, and you've heard what you've heard. And if you've heard things that sound like they make sense to you and that you believe can contribute value to your life, and you haven't applied them, the first thing to eliminate is any sense of guilt about that or any sense of anything lacking or deficient in you. The thing to get is that virtually no one is actually capable of learning a body of material and applying it even in a way that's good for them without some sort of artificial consequences in place. It's like imagine if you had college and you didn't have grades. Everyone theoretically knows they need to learn English and philosophy, but if there weren't consequences like the threat of failure and social judgment, almost no one would do anything. And it points to something really interesting in our nature. What is it about us? What is it about our lives? And we take this for granted because it's so universal, that makes it so challenging for people to take the actions and make the changes that they themselves recognize would deliver the results that they're looking for. And it's a universal phenomenon. There's a whole science of this called behavior change. And what behavior change science looks at is it says, what does it really do to get people to change their behavior? You can have someone who smokes and knows that it's contributing to their risk of lung cancer, and a lot of people find it very difficult to quit. And even when they do quit, there's a deep ambivalence about it. Many diabetics will eat high glycemic carbohydrate foods, pizzas and breads and breakfast cereals and candies, even though it is literally killing them and likely going to kill them in a painful way. And it's easy to look at someone like that, just like it's easy to look at an alcoholic or a drug user or anyone who has any sort of destructive behavior pattern and judge them. And we all do it. And we look out at others and we see them doing all sorts of things that clearly aren't in their best interest or the best interest of society. And we condemn them for it and say, what's wrong with you? Why aren't you more strong-willed? Why can't you do what you should do or are supposed to do? And the funny part is we do the same thing to ourselves. We do it on a more subtle scale because in our own eyes, our sins are perhaps less egregious. Well, all of it's crazy. It's all absolutely crazy. And to get extraordinary results in life, it's kind of ironic. You actually have to stop judging yourself and you have to stop judging results. Because this entire mentality sets up a way of approaching life change that's basically doomed for failure before it begins. There's some statistics I want to go over at this point in the course. So about 95% of people who begin a weight loss program or any sort of health transformation program get no results or quickly reverse the results that they get. Of the 5% who get results and sustain those results, the vast majority aren't satisfied with the results. So they lose the weight or they remedy a chronic condition, but it doesn't make them happy. So a tiny fraction get results, This isn't my programs, this is in general. And a tiny fraction are actually satisfied with the results that they get. And then the real question is, what is that fraction of a fraction that actually gets good results and is then satisfied with those results? Because this course is called Breakthrough Results. And we've done a lot of covering of really a comprehensive and integrated formula for you to take your body, your health, and your life in a new, more positive direction. We have started with a foundation where we've actually looked at the question, what is health? How does it work? We've come up with an answer. Health is organization. Health is when the whole body is working in an integrated and organized fashion. Health is like a symphony where all the different pieces are playing together under the conductor, and the conductor is, you could think of the conductor as your genome, and the way that you live your life lets that conductor organize that symphony in a way where we thrive. We tend to be resistant to infection. We tend not to develop chronic disease. Emotions and mood tend to be more stable. We tend to be able to focus more easily. So we talked about the idea that mind state, exercise, diet, sleep are the core components of that. And we simplified all of this. When it comes to nutrition, mostly what we said is eat whole foods. Eat the stuff that exists out in nature and a small percentage of stuff that doesn't, but mostly only stuff from out in nature. And to help you, we got even more specific. We talked about the common problems that people have, like inflammation and what to do about that, and changing the diet based on that specifically. We talked about exercising in more efficient rhythms, making that easy, breathing, and there's an easy way to meditate made available. And if you can take all of this and build it into your lifestyle, it really does work. If you can find a way to carve out 4 hours a week for exercise, 3 hours a week to prepare healthy food for the whole week, and probably another 2 hours a week to meditate. So we're talking about 10, 11 hours a week invested in your health and well-being. That's extraordinary, and you can really thrive. Get to the gym for 45 minutes four times a week, stretch and cool down afterwards. On Sundays, prepare a lot of healthy whole foods dishes in bulk and have them for you to sample from the entire week and meditate 20 minutes a day. If you can make those transformations, it'll be great. Most people can't do it. Even with honest, earnest intent, it doesn't happen. Or it happens, and then a week later or 2 weeks later, it's abandoned. And the funny thing about this is if we look at ourselves, this pattern of start, stop, of commitment and then fall off in commitment, or even an inability to commit, it pervades most things in our lives. There are so many areas where we know in our heart of hearts that if we were consistent, we could produce breakthrough results, extraordinary results. It happens in our business relationships. It happens in our personal relationships. And so at some point, you really start to have to ask the question, and it's a good question. It's an incredibly valuable question to ask. What's going on here? What's going on with me? What's going on with people? Why do human beings, not me, human beings as a result, find it so hard to change in positive ways? We take it for granted. We don't usually think about it with reference to ourselves, but we look at other people and we take it for granted. Oh, he'll never change. Oh, she'll never change. Yeah, that guy, he's just lazy. You know, he's just a loser. He'll never, you know, get it together. He'll never change. Yeah, well, that person hates being lazy. That person hates being a loser. They despise it. It ruins their life. And yet, what is it in them that makes it so challenging? You know, other people are manipulative or they're liars or there's so many self-destructive behavior patterns out there. And we look at human beings, we say just their personality, just the way they are, and yet no one wants to be any of those things. So to create breakthrough results, we have to confront this question in ourselves. First thing we have to do is face full on the fact that it's not just that we don't. It's almost like we're wired to make it virtually impossible to do what's in our own best interest consistently. It's like we're built that way. And we can make all the excuses in the world. We can blame work. We can blame family obligations. We can blame all sorts of stuff. And for some of us, that's more real than others. Some people really do have lots of life demands. But at the end of the day, if we're honest with ourselves, we do have to recognize that it's not really the case, mostly, that anything outside of us prevents us from doing what's good for us? Not really. Like if we earnestly wanted to, we could find a way to change those things. We could find a solution. We could create the time. We could create the space. And the reason we don't understand the reason we don't. And a lot of us have a very uncomfortable relationship with this. And we don't even look at it. a lot of people don't even face, why don't I eat better? Why don't I get to the gym? If you ask, there's a bunch of excuses, and there's I'll do it later, I'm too busy. There's a whole raft of mental excuses. And what characterizes an excuse is it's held up as a justification after the fact of judging yourself as lacking. You don't make excuses unless you already agree that you've screwed up. It's really interesting. Whenever you're making an excuse, you've judged yourself, said there's something wrong with me, I'm bad, I should have done better, suppress that, and then you've made an excuse in order to justify it. So wherever you're at with the whole sense of there's something I should be doing for my life and my health, I want to rank all of us to rank ourselves on sort of a scale from 0 to 10. So 0 is where you want to be. 0 is I am completely at peace with every choice that I've made. I'm completely at peace with where I am with my health, with my life, and I feel like my actions are totally consistent, and maybe I don't get it all perfect all the time, but there's no angst, there's no guilt. I just am where I am. And notice that there's no evaluation of the where you are. You could be 30 pounds overweight and not going to the gym and be totally at peace because you're walking and you're making efforts to eat healthier. You're at peace. You've made what you consider to be positive change. 5 would be something like, you know, I've tried some things and I've put in some effort and I feel reasonably good about myself, and then I'm a little hard on myself about a couple other things. And 10 would be you're beating up on yourself. I have not followed this course at all. I really wanted to. I didn't follow through. I feel like I'm always like this. I don't know why I can't make time for myself. I can't make space. So everyone falls somewhere on that spectrum. Well, the first thing to get, first of all, if you're completely satisfied, you're great. This conversation isn't for you. Wherever else you are, from sort of, you know, like a 1 or a 2 would be like a subtle sense of, you know, I know there's some things that I could do better, but mostly I'm pretty cool with myself. I take pretty good care of myself. Sure, I should meditate or something. Don't do it. Maybe I will someday. That's like a 1 or a 2. So anywhere you are from a 1 or a 2 all the way to 10, which is someone who's pretty vicious to themselves with self-recrimination and self-judgment and always trying to do better and change their body and feeling like they're failing. Wherever you are, what we want to do is take a step back. Let's look at what's really going on inside of ourselves that prevents us from living in a way that we ourselves would choose, and then see if there's something that we can do about this. So the first thing to consider, and we talked about this a little bit in our mind-body class, but it's a point that I want to make more deeply now. The first thing to consider is that we're not really free as human beings. We don't have freedom. We don't have free will in the way that maybe we like to think that we do. We have the potential for free will, but most of us seldom or never exercise it, and we are literally trapped in something not unlike The Matrix. If you've seen the movie The Matrix, we're literally trapped inside perceptions and emotions that run our lives that seem to be outside of our control. So consider the example. You listen to one of these lectures. You hear about interval-based training, and you decide that you hate traditional running, and interval-based training really may be the thing for you, and you love the idea of doing these burst-stop exercises, and you even do it a couple times, and you find that you do feel better, and your energy levels do improve. And you commit to doing this for a month, and you're sure it'll make a difference. And then you find that you're sabotaging yourself. You're turning off the alarm clock in the morning, you make time to go to the gym in the afternoon, and then you make up an excuse, and you don't go. Well, what on earth is going on? This is so bizarre that this exists, and it's so common that we don't notice that it's bizarre. I mean, this is the default condition of humanity all over planet Earth. There's something that I want to do. I believe that doing it will make a positive difference. I commit to doing it, and then it seems as though something within me stops me from doing it. And it's a consequence of this trend and how universal it is that we have all the psychological literature that we do. You've surely heard the phrase, he's his own worst enemy, or she's her own worst enemy. We're all our own worst enemy, you may have heard people say. And it's very true. All of us are our own worst enemy. On the positive side, you hear many people say, you know, there's really nothing you can't do if you set your mind to it, and the only one who can stop you is you. Well, great advice, but it seems like 95 to 99% of humanity stops themselves. So maybe we should really take a look at what is it in us that stops us. And what can we do about it? 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 So you are where you are right now. Your participation, it is where it is. Your health is where it is. Your life is where it is. And you surely have a very rich sense of all the things that you could do and should do to move yourself in a positive direction. And if you're like 99% of people, the biggest obstacle is I just won't do it, or I feel like I can't do it, or it seems overwhelming, or I try to do it and I can't make the time, or I can't develop the habit, or I start and then I quit. Not only are you not alone, this is virtually universal. And this is the reason there are coaches and coaching programs and all these structures. This is also, interestingly, to some extent, the reason that there's an industry. There's a fitness and weight loss industry. It's so funny when you think about it. Every year there's 30, 40, 50 new books on this, so many new courses, so much new stuff, and people don't really kind of stop and think, if any of it worked, the industry would be over. I mean, if any of this really worked on a very large scale, it would work, and we wouldn't need more. And it's not that it doesn't work because the theories are wrong. You know, the theory we presented in this class is my theory, and I think it's a good one. It starts from this idea of harmony with nature. Other people have other theories. And from a physical perspective, there are a lot of good theories out there. But the breakdown occurs somewhere else. It occurs in the sphere of what we'll just call self-sabotage. So I don't want to belabor this point too much. I just want to kind of get everybody on board with this idea that it's kind of weird and deserves attention and is far more strange than we normally credit that human beings have such trouble doing what they themselves choose to do. It's a very strange thing, and it needs to be dealt with. So let's look at a few explanations of why this could be. One is the evolutionary biology explanation. The evolution explanation is the explanation you would get from almost all biological scientists, people who studied biology and believe that we are completely controlled by evolution, including our psychology. And what a biologist would say to you is that evolution not only built the body, it built the mind. And just like we have opposable thumbs because that allowed us to use tools, which let, you know, the people who could use tools had more kids than the people who couldn't use tools, and that trait evolved, we also developed all sorts of instincts. And some of the instincts we developed, well, we developed a taste for sweet foods and fatty foods. Because back when we were first evolving, there weren't a lot of those foods around. So we developed a biological drive to eat those foods. And we also developed a biological drive to be lazy. We developed a drive to conserve energy, and it drives us to not want to put effort into things. And the evolutionary psychologists would also say that one of the biggest human biological drives is what you could call social fear. It's to be intensely concerned with what everyone else thinks so that you will do things to make other people like you more, because that's very important for your biological survival and to get your genes into the next generation. Think about the idea that if you're in a tribe and everyone thinks you're really cool and loves you, you might get, you know, the best girls and get more meat and be able to feed your kids more, which is an advantage. Whereas if you're a jerk and people don't like you, you're going to be on the outside, less protection, less food. So the evolutionary explanation for why we find it so hard to do things that make sense for us is that biology has built us with inherent instincts and drives, and those instincts and drives push us in directions that we have no control over and in many ways kind of rule us. And when you really start to look at this model, on the one hand, it's interesting. You know, there seems to be something to it. There's something to the idea that our ancestry might dictate our impulses and that, you know, guys seem to have a lot more trouble staying monogamous than women. And there's some good biological reasons for that, primarily because most of human history, we didn't have birth control. So if women were promiscuous, they'd get pregnant a lot. Guys didn't have that problem, and so a scientist would tell you men then evolved to be promiscuous. But there's a few problems with this. Well, the moral problem is obvious. Do we want to excuse people's behavior by saying, oh, it's biology? No, and it doesn't work. And you can't tell yourself after you've, you know, if you have eaten three bags of potato chips, oh, it's biology. It doesn't work. But let's throw the moral problem aside because it's not a class of morality. Another interesting place where the biological explanation breaks down and has really nothing to say for itself is, what about free will? I mean, what are we really talking about here? We have instincts and drives, and we've all experienced it. You've had the experience of sitting there looking at a chocolate eclair or looking at a piece of cake or knowing that you shouldn't go, you know, fight with someone or knowing you shouldn't date someone who's bad for you. And it's like you feel this inner compulsion to do it. But what about your free will? What about your consciousness? I mean, there you are, conscious being, seemingly capable of choice, seemingly so. If I say to you right now, you can raise your left hand or your right hand, your choice, you can think it through and then raise your left hand and then say, you know, well, no, I'm going to change, raise my right hand instead. You seemingly have freedom. Well, what's the relationship between your freedom and your drives and your impulses? Science doesn't have an answer for this because science can't account for consciousness and it can't account for free will. They make no sense from the perspective of science and no one has ever explained them in any way that's at all meaningful. So you're sort of, if you want to start with biology, you're sort of left with this murky picture. I'm sort of free, but I have biological drives and I can't necessarily control my biological drives and they're really strong. And sometimes I just have to give into them. And when I give into them, it's like makes me a little bit happy and then more sad in the end. And that's usually the way it goes with giving into a drive. You have a drive to have promiscuous sex. You do it. You have fun for an hour, and you feel guilt for 12 years. You know, you have a drive to eat a bunch of pizza when you're on a diet. You enjoy the pizza for 17 minutes, and then you feel wretchedly guilty for the rest of the night and for, you know, maybe a week later. It's really interesting. So we're sort of back to ground zero. Coming from the biological perspective of we have drives and impulses that can oppose what we want, actually oppose what we want, doesn't really get us anywhere. What on earth do you do about it? So we could take a different perspective, and we could take the position of mainstream psychology or psychiatry. And what psychology and psychiatry would say, they'd agree that there are biological drives, but they would look more at our childhood and our upbringing and our socialization. And they would talk about the idea that we've sort of come to find comfort in different patterns that are familiar to us. So someone who's raised in a household where Saturday nights are special because they get chocolate cake and mom works hard to bake the cake and, you know, is very loving with chocolate cake, they might develop an attraction to chocolate cake. Or if someone's made fun of in school and they run home and they eat a bunch of Snickers bars, and the Snickers bars will create a little bit of a drug high in their brain. And that drug high helps them feel better about the social rejection of people being mean to them in school. They'll develop a compulsive or an addictive pattern around the Snickers bars. So if we look from the perspective of psychology, and then we examine this phenomenon of why can't I do things that are good for me? And I've simplified psychology. There are many other perspectives we can't get into tonight in deference to the psychologists out there. But we're going to get to some sort of emotion-based explanation where it's like if we're not doing what we know is good for us, if we're not doing what we want to, it's sort of like our subconscious mind, the part of the mind that we don't control, has gotten confused and associates doing this bad thing with making us feel better. And we feel bad, and then we're almost like driven by this subconscious mind to do this very thing that's going to end up ultimately making us feel worse. And again, you run into the problem. What's your free will? Here you are, a free being, and yet it seems like there's this other thing active inside of you, which is pushing you in a direction that you don't want to go in. So the biologists say, look at the biological drives and impulses. The psychologists say it's your subconscious mind. It's not logical. It's not rational. It has associations that you don't understand. And in either case, you're sort of buggered. And, you know, at least in the psychology world, they'd say talk about it enough, get some therapy, unearth repressed memories. Maybe there's hope. Maybe you'll start to be able to do stuff that's good for you. But frankly, most of the time, I don't think the model really works all that well. There are a few forms of psychotherapy that I like that I see people get results from, but it seems very laborious, takes a long time, and I haven't seen anything really consistent that helps people change their lives in positive directions that's simple. You get a great therapist and you work with them for enough time, you can get great results, but not everybody can find a great therapist. There aren't that many great therapists and it takes a long time. So let's lay that view aside too. The biological view doesn't offer us much help. The psychological view I don't think offers us that much help either. The next way to look at this problem, and this is the problem of problems. This is not just about controlling our eating. This is not just about getting to the gym. This is about everything, the not doing what we know in our heart of hearts, know in the core of our being is in our own best interest, the inability to do what is in our own best interest. This is the problem of problems. Let's look at another view. There's a wonderful thing that's from the Buddhist tradition that the Buddha himself once said about human beings. And he said that the human mind, in its regular mode, produces what he called dukkha. And what dukkha meant is that ka, I believe, was the word for a cart, like a two-wheeled hand cart that people used to push around India back when the Buddha was born. And Duke meant broken, and it may be that Duke meant cart and car meant broken. I don't know. It's ancient Pali or Sanskrit or some language. But in any event, Dukha referred to a cart with a broken wheel. And of course, when a cart has a broken wheel, you try to push it, and it's always like kind of turning and getting stuck in the mud, and you can't get it to go the way that you want it to go, and it's really frustrating. It's inherently dysfunctional. Well, the Buddha said that's the human mind. The human mind is inherently dysfunctional, and the reason it's dysfunctional is it doesn't go the way that we want it to go. You can't push, seemingly. You can't push your mind the way that you want it to go. And this is very strange, taken for granted by all of us, but very odd. So you know that you want to feel good about eating a tasty, healthy meal. You know, something like salmon and spinach and chicken, healthy stuff, you know, berry-based smoothies, things that are good for you that are also tasty. And yet there's this inner compulsion that sometimes will take you in the direction of fast food. You don't want it, and yet it has you. And it's interesting because 7 hours of the day, you're really clear that you don't want cookies. You don't feel desire for cookies. You're not tempted by cookies. You're very happy about not eating cookies. And then you get home and you sit on your couch and you kind of get this weird feeling where you want the cookies and you try to hold out against it and it just gets more intense and eventually you feel almost compelled to eat the cookies. And if you could, in that moment, truly if you could, you would say to your mind, stop it. Feel good without the cookies. Feel the way you felt 7, 8 hours ago. Feel good about being healthy. And the mind doesn't listen. It's dukkha. It's producing dysfunction. It's not going the way that you want it to go. So again, I ask the question, what happened to your free will? There's something you want. All you got to do is get your own mind in line. It doesn't do what you want. So we talk about this subconscious mind, and the subconscious mind has us do things we don't want to do, and we just accept this situation as human beings. This is madness. Why don't we learn things about this? Why don't we explore it? Well, if we want to get results, we have to. We utterly have to. We really have to look at this phenomenon. So what I want to talk about for the next 10 or 15 minutes is just the beginning of the discussion, and it's the beginning of the discussion of how do you take a recipe for creating breakthroughs that you yourself believe will work and actually live it. Actually live it. How do you apply this and actually live it? And the question is the same as how do you get your subconscious mind to do what you want? Literally, how do you channelize your subconscious mind? How do you bring your own mind in harmony with your intentions? Well, to do that is essentially a matter of learning to work with your emotions. Emotions need to be understood before we can get all this down. Because the ingredient that I haven't talked about as I've run through these various scenarios and I've spoken about the idea, the various ideas, the various perspectives we could take on why is it that our own minds seem to sabotage us, is that this always happens when you're in a state of negative emotion. Negative emotion is the common ingredient. You never deviate from your consciously chosen course without at least some buzz of negative emotion. So when you're feeling great throughout the entire day, you don't eat ice cream. You come home, you feel lonely, that's when the ice cream eating happens. That guy who's broken your heart 12 times, who you know will come over and spend the night with you but won't be good to you, you don't want to call him when you feel good. You want to call him when you feel bad. And the hysterical thing is you're only going to end up feeling worse, and you know it. And there's so much in life that's like this. People who've quit smoking, when they're not stressed, when they're feeling good, they don't want to smoke. When they're feeling bad, they want to smoke. And it seems as though the subconscious mind has said to itself, doing this thing will make me feel better, except you know it's not true. You know it's not true. You know it's not true. And yet it takes you over frequently. And you end up engaging in exactly the activity you've chosen not to. So the answer to comprehending this and the answer to gaining power with it, you have to understand your emotions. You have to actually be able to work with your own emotions because it's negative emotions that drive us to undermine ourselves 100% of the time. And this is the part that's really interesting and ties this conversation sort of together from the start. I started off talking about judgment and looking at all the people who it's obvious to us are fucking up their own lives, maybe messing up our culture, and they should just do better. And there's that word again, that should word. And you can look at anyone doing any sort of self-destructive behavior or even behavior that's destructive to others. And the perspective most of us take on this, whether it's criminals or drug users or addictive eaters or alcoholics, most of us at some level look down on these people, consider them to be moral failures, think they should just do better, think that they lack willpower. There's some level of condemnation for most of us. And yet what's interesting is there in our own lives, the same theme is present, not to the same degree. It's present. Maybe you don't do heroin. Maybe you've never, you know, committed a felony. But all of us sabotage ourselves. And if you sabotage yourself, always has impacts on others. Always hurts other people. You can't sabotage yourself and not let other people down. It's a one-to-one. So the same trend is present in us. And if you start to notice that it's when your negative emotions are present that every act of self-sabotage, that every single destructive thing always proceeds from feeling bad first, we can actually begin to make the universal connection that everything that everyone does that's bad is like this. And this is not a moral argument. I'm not excusing anything. Ultimately, I want to argue for our free will, but how we actually access it. This isn't like people who commit crimes or people who do drugs or people who don't follow their diets. They should all be excused. It's more like they should all be understood because it's all the same phenomenon, and we can all get ourselves in this. So understanding what causes negative emotion is unbelievably liberating because negative emotion precedes negative behavior, and negative results follow from the combination of negative emotion and negative behavior. Whenever you have a negative result or the lack of a positive result, it is always rooted in negative emotion, bound up with negative behavior, because ultimately they lead into one another, and they're inextricably bound together. So what causes negative emotion? Well, this is the fascinating thing, and we alluded to this earlier in the course. Life does not cause negative emotion. Thoughts cause negative emotion. Thoughts about life. It's the mind itself that generates negative emotions. It's not what actually happens to you. So as human beings, we have problems. Problems are essentially universal until you do an amazing amount of work on yourself to get to the point where you can live a problem-free life. And for many people, that's a fantasy. It ultimately, I believe, is achievable. But problems are seemingly universal, and most people blame their negative emotions on their problems. If it weren't for my arthritis or my bills or my husband or this person or that person or Gaddafi or lack of world peace, there's always something external. That's the cause of my negative emotion. Well, at a certain level, we have to recognize that for you to feel something, it has to be a response to something that happens in your mind. If it's not in your mind, you can't feel something emotionally. At a very basic level, you know, you may not like a certain practice, you may not like childhood labor, but if you don't think about it, you can't feel bad. So you don't feel bad about childhood labor, you feel bad because you're thinking about childhood labor. Now again, I'm not advocating don't think about things that are bad so that you get to feel good. This is not that simplistic an argument. What's interesting is that the negative feelings that we feel, we misunderstand. We think we feel bad things when we look at stuff that we don't like in the world because of the stuff that we don't like in the world. It's not how emotion works. We actually feel negative emotion, and start to try this out. You may find this incredible. You may be completely incredulous about this, but start to try it out in your life. Start to notice whether or not this is true. We feel negative emotion based on our judgment of and condemnation of anything in the world. Anything. Any form of judgment or condemnation causes negative emotion. It's a one-to-one, and it's instantaneous. So when you look at a human being and you think a thought like that selfish bastard, you feel a negative emotion called rage. Rage feels awful, and it's purely destructive. Nothing in the history of the world has ever been done that's good from a place of rage. When you look at tabloid headlines that are condemning some corrupt political official and you feel disgust, you feel awful. Disgust feels awful. And you think that bastard robbing money from New York is making me feel awful. No, your condemnation of that person is making you feel awful. It's a one-to-one. When you do this to others, you do it to yourself. When you do it to yourself, you do it to yourself. So the vicious circle that many, many, many people are trapped in with all forms of attempts at transforming themselves and their own lives is that we condemn and judge ourselves for our inadequacies in living the way that we have determined that we're supposed to live. that judgment and condemnation creates negative emotion. Negative emotion is like a black hole that sucks us into taking self-destructive actions, which then cause us to judge ourselves more and perpetuate. And all this happens faster than thought. You're not aware of this consciously, but it's going on in the depth of your being. And if you start to notice it, you'll be able to catch it. You'll start to notice it, and there's something ultimately that you can do about it. It causes us to literally stay stuck right where we are. Most people who have become, for whatever reason, interested in life change find themselves in a self-judgment, producing negative emotion, producing failure, producing frustration, producing self-judgment, producing negative emotion, producing failure, producing frustration cycle. And then when we try to liberate ourselves from this cycle, it usually occurs in some form of either extreme sort of self-motivation, where you try to take massive action with extraordinary effort, like a massive application of willpower, and maybe you can hold that together for 2 weeks, maybe a month. But no one can sustain that kind of life. Willing yourself in a direction, fighting against your own subconscious, is not a recipe for happiness, and it's not a recipe for ultimate success. Or we look for an external solution. We try to, you know, get liposuction or have someone else fix our problems, or for some people it's prayer. But it's a quest outside of the self for a solution. Well, the whole problem is, what's down there at the core? Why are we in this place in the first place? Why are we so stuck? What is it in the subconscious mind that's at the root of all of this? What's down deep inside of us causing that very dukkha that Buddha talked about, causing these patterns, these self-destructive patterns that all of us deal with one way or another, or at least self-limiting patterns? If you don't like the word self-destructive, try on self-limiting. I think all of us can admit that we limit ourselves. We don't live at our full potential. Well, there is something down there at the core, negative emotion. You're feeling inspiration, you're feeling joy, you're feeling love, you're feeling a connection to the world, even if you're facing monstrous problems, even if you're dealing with what's going on in Japan right now, or if you're dealing with what's going on in the Middle East. If you have a sense of purpose, you're galvanized, you're inspired. It even banishes fear. It's astonishing. So when you're in the presence of profound positive emotion, what's going on in the world doesn't matter. You feel great and you take constructive action. People even do this in war. People do this when they develop a tremendous vision for any project. But most people can't sustain it. And they can't sustain it because they get sucked back down into a vortex of negative emotion. Well, we already said the cause of negative emotion is one thing, judgment and condemnation. Sounds like a religious sermon. There's a reason for that. The religions that have persisted, the ones that have come to dominate the earth, they had to get something right. There's a reason they're so common, and I'm not of any particular religious faith, but I think that essence of Christian teachings is spot on. And you find similar trends in Buddhism. Buddhism is extremely against any form of judgment. Buddhism is all about the acceptance of the present moment. In Judaism, there are strong themes of non-judgment. Of course, Christ's teaching is non-judgment is probably his principal teaching. So these have become profound trends in universal religious thought systems because it's so fundamental to how the human emotional system works. And our emotional system is there at the core of everything that we do. So if you can find a way to feel more positive emotion and less negative emotion, you will take more positive actions and fewer negative actions, and everything in you will work better. You'll eat better, you'll move better, you'll succeed more. The interesting thing, of course, is that feeling better, positive emotion, we talked about this in the mind-body class, it directly makes your life work better. When you feel happier, your immune system works better, your liver works better, your heart works better. It's astonishing. So positive emotion directly impacts your body. Your brain works better, you focus more easily. And indirectly, when you're feeling great, you don't do things that are bad for you. When you're feeling bad, you do. So if you can find a way to master this, if you can find a way to get yourself to feel good, you'll break yourself out of self-destructive cycles in every way, and you will start to thrive more and more and more. And at that point, it becomes easy to live by the formula in this class. You can live mindset, exercise, diet, sleep. You can meditate. You can do the breathing. You can find the extra time. You can eat healthy. You'll be happy. You'll go to the gym. You'll enjoy your workouts. You'll be more social. Your life, you just thrive. The whole trick is finding a way to master this game of feeling better. And mastering the game of feeling better is mastering essentially non-condemnation, non-judgment. It's a mental transformation. So how do you do it? Well, here's the kicker. You can't look at your mind and tell it to stop doing this stuff. You just can't. And the fact of the matter is that as we grow up, as we go through childhood, it is the case that there are some very deep mental patterns that get put into us that sort of form the core of our judgment activities for the rest of our lives. And these become what are sometimes called our self-limiting beliefs. These are our self-destructive patterns. But you can begin to unwind all of this. You truly, truly can. And making a commitment to doing that will contribute more to your ultimate success in life transformation, whether it be health or whether it be something in your career or with your family, than anything else that you can do. So what I want this course to ultimately offer, you've got all the MP3s, you can listen to them anytime. I highly encourage you to download them, they're yours to keep. You have distilled everything you need to form the basics of a comprehensive and integrated strategy for the physical side of your life to work. Everything that you really honestly need to know about nutrition, supplementation, exercise, sleep, detoxification, food allergies, systemic infections, all the big stuff that most people deal with, all the knowledge I've been able to accumulate over 10, 11 years of doing this, it's all covered in this course to a pretty good depth, and it's about 90% of what you need. And the other 10%, it would take a long time to acquire. So it's 90% of what you need. It's more than enough. And as this course ends, what I'm going to do is I'm going to digest all of it for you in a PDF. You're going to get a nice, long PDF so that you don't have to go back and review all the MP3s that pretty much covers the whole perspective. You'll have it all. And it's a recipe and it's a blueprint, and it by no means is the only way. There are lots of great thinkers. There's lots of great systems. There's lots of different approaches to nutrition and exercise and meditation and life philosophies that would work for you. This is one of them, and it'll work for you. But the kicker is you got to do it. So then the critical thing is getting yourself to do it. Well, that whole motivation, force yourself, take action, make a decision. Look, if that approach worked, the whole world would be perfect. You got to let yourself off the hook. It is an incredibly rare individual who's truly capable of profound life change based on a decision and willpower. And a lot of the ones who do, they're able to change the way they eat and move, and it's all because they suppress what's going on for them psychologically. And some of them have nervous breakdowns, and they get heart attacks, and they may have great bodies and be awesome at what they do, but they're secretly not happy either. It's a very, very small percentage of people who both get the results that they want and are deeply satisfied and happy doing it. That small percentage, the ones who experience true breakthroughs, breakthroughs that manifest as a difference in life circumstance, a physical difference, the body looks different, it thrives, you're healthier, your performance increases, and you enjoy it, and you feel better about yourself, and you feel a sense of peace and a sense of confidence. That tiny percentage, somehow they make a breakthrough in the functioning of their subconscious mind. Somehow they find a way to truly feel better, to truly experience more positive emotion, to change the way the core of their minds, the core of their psychology works. Those are the ones who really get what all of us are looking for. Because ultimately, all of us are looking for the same things. We have our superficial goals, which may not seem superficial, but in this context, they're superficial. And our superficial goals are things like weight loss, looking better, maybe becoming stronger, even perhaps making some degree of progress with a chronic condition like diabetes. And to call that superficial may sound harsh. I don't mean superficial in a judgment term. I mean superficial by the level of surface. Those are goals at the level of the body. The deeper goals that all of us share, they're so simple. We all want to be at peace. We want inner peace, mental peace, a peace of mind. All of us want to be happy. We want happiness. We want joy. We want more pleasure in our lives. We all want to experience love. We want to love ourselves. We want to give love to others. And we all want to contribute. We want to make a difference for people around us. We want to feel a sense of purpose. We want to feel a sense of meaning. We want to feel like our lives mean something. And happiness, peace, joy, love, and a sense of purpose, these are the real rewards. These are the real goals. And ultimately, any form of body transformation, look, if you get healthy and fit and you don't have that stuff, who cares? I don't want to live for 60 years without all of that in my life. I'm 33. I don't want to reach 93 and not have a life full of all that. I only want to live to 93 if I get to have all that. That's true success. True success is getting what you want and feeling that way and knowing that it's real, knowing that you're connected. Well, all of that is the mind. Of course it's the mind. What could joy and love and peace and fulfillment and purpose and connection be other than the subconscious mind? It's a state of being. And positive emotion reflects that mental state. And when you're in that mental state, making the right decisions and taking the right actions becomes easy. So the keys to the kingdom, the absolute keys, it is so mind-blowingly simple. I wish someone had told me this when I was 21, so I could have been skeptical for 3 months and then started to notice it was true and then worked on it and then eventually accepted it and then mastered it by 24 instead of discovering it later in my life, in my 30s, and working on mastering it now. The keys to the kingdom are negative thought patterns condemn people. They condemn people. And that's what causes negative emotion. And here's the real kicker, and I saved this one for the end because I think it's a really profound point and it's a great takeaway. Each of us only gets one view of humanity. We only get one view of a human being. We only get one set of standards. The standards that you apply to others, you apply to yourself. You can't escape it. And the standards that you apply to yourself, you apply to others. So as we look through life and we read Us Weekly and we look at celebrities and, oh, she gained 15 pounds and we think snarky thoughts about them, or we condemn people, or we don't like people for being a gossip, or we don't like people being, you know, liars, or we condemn people for being thieves or whatever, we have made human worth conditional. We've decided that another human being's fitness, that their worth, that whether we're going to love them, whether we're going to accept them, whether we're going to respect them, it's conditional. And once you've admitted conditional value standards, one, they always make you feel like crap. You never feel good when you're condemning someone else. But once you've admitted conditional value standards, you have to apply them to yourself. And it generates deep psychological fear. You start to suspect that other people are judging you, and you judge yourself. And it makes you feel bad. And when you feel bad, you do bad things, which makes you judge yourself more. So non-judgment, keys to the kingdom. They nailed it. All these ancient religions completely nailed it. How do you get there? Well, let's talk a little bit mechanistically. We all want breakthroughs. We want to take our lives in positive directions. Ultimately, if you don't find a practice that helps you condition your mind to work in a way that's more functional, nothing else that you do is ever going to take you in the direction of all that great stuff that we talked about. Getting the results, transforming your body, transforming your life, all great, but you want the inner peace. You want the inspiration. You want the being stuff. You want to be happy, be vibrant, be peaceful, not just look right and do the right things. So what do those practices look like? Can't argue for meditation enough. You got an introduction to meditation with this course. It's a downloadable audio if you haven't downloaded it yet. It's a very simple form. It's very relaxing when you do it. The entire practice is about stilling your mind, breathing deeply, being more peaceful, and you should feel good when you do it. The one form of psychotherapy that I think is great is called cognitive behavioral therapy. I've mentioned it before. And you can do it through the web. There's something called the Work on the Web. If you Google the Work on the Web, you'll find it. It's about $15 a month. It's extremely affordable. It's a very well-reviewed program. And it starts to help you literally change the tendencies of your own subconscious mind to be in this constant process of thinking thoughts, he's not good enough, she's not good enough, this is not good enough, I'm not good enough, why didn't I do this, I shouldn't have eaten that yesterday, why don't I ever do what I'm supposed to, whatever those thoughts are for you. It literally starts to stop the spinning of that sphere of your mind that you can't control. You really can work with it, you can learn to control it. As you learn to control it, you'll feel better and better and better and better and better. I've mentioned transformational work before. And transformational work is a whole body that looks at this in a much deeper way than I can cover tonight. And if you're curious about transformational work, look up the Landmark Forum. Fantastic course that will help you begin to understand what's really going on in your mind when you start to feel bad at night and, you know, eat ice cream. Even what we've talked about tonight, start to look. There's some form of criticism and condemnation happening. I guarantee it. You're not feeling bad unless there is. And then the other resources, there's loads of books. There's an avalanche of material that's been written about this stuff. And a lot of it is spiritual in nature, because ultimately I do think that the question of what is our consciousness, who really are we, it is a spiritual question. I mean, free will makes no sense from the perspective of science. So there's a lot of great spiritual treatments of this. You know, some of the Buddhist literature is fantastic. Marianne Williamson is a wonderful author who writes on some of these themes. There's a book called A Return to Love that explores some of this. She's actually Jewish, but she writes from a Christian perspective. You could sort of think of her as a converted Christian. But the point that I want to drive home, this ultimately isn't a course that's about this, but I did want to finish it up because we've done all this stuff about the body. I wanted to finish up really highlighting the importance of this. You got to do something. You got to find the thing that's right for you, and you can start small. But if you don't find the willpower to do this, if you can't get yourself over the hump to commit to doing something to make doing everything else in your life easier. That's a great way to think about this. Can you do something to make doing everything else easier? Then you probably are stuck. You're probably stuck in a start-stop mentality, and you're not going to get breakthroughs, and you're not going to get great results. But if you can commit to this, do something and start a journey. Find what's right for you. Start with meditating. Listen to me. Read a couple of these authors. Eckhart Tolle is another great one, Eckhart Tolle. Read a couple of these authors. Find what vibes for you. Start to notice how weird it is that you can't control your own mind and that your mind makes you do things that you don't want to do, how bizarre that is, and get serious about ending that and taking control of your own mind. You'll find the right resources. Just commit to starting. And then to the extent to which you can use those resources to change how you're relating to yourself, start to apply the material in this course. You're going to get the whole blueprint. You got all the audio. It's all there for all of you. And I can't encourage you enough to look at transforming the way that you eat. Look at transforming the way that you move. Look at transforming your physical life through the lens of self-mastery, through the lens of this is about so much more than me getting to the gym. If I want to get to the gym and I'm not doing it, this is about me being in control, me actually making choices and following through on my own choices without having to force myself and then judge myself when I don't do it. It's about bringing ease into freedom, bringing ease into making up your mind, moving in a direction consistent with how you've made up your mind, and finding satisfaction in the fulfillment of the goals that you've set. That is such a worthwhile goal, and it's so inspiring if you can admit that it's possible. Not that you can get a result, but that you can actually find freedom and ease in your life, that you can stop your own mind from stopping you. That you can use to inspire you to a little bit of effort, to get you to do the 15, 20 minutes a day that it takes, to get you to maybe read one of those books, take one of those courses, do the meditation on the CD that I sent, and if you love that meditation, do it for 2 weeks. If you find it relaxing, which most people do, go read The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. That meditation is based on The Power of Now, and it'll talk about these themes, and it'll take you deeper into what I'm talking about tonight. And let that be your journey. Get serious about this and find your own path. Find your authors. Find your courses. So there's more for you here from me if you like this. And for all you guys who took this course, I'm actually launching a new course in 6 weeks. It's a $300 course. You all get it for free if you want it, totally for free. You've been here with me through this journey. This has been a bit of a pilot. There have been some technical difficulties. This one, we've nailed it. The technology's in place. It's going to be a great class. You get it for free. And the class is called Ending the Weight Loss Game. And it's a little bit about weight loss, and about 4 of the 12 lectures will be review for you. But because it's called Ending the Weight Loss Game, it's more about what we're talking about tonight. It's about the inner psychological game. I'm going to move much more deeply into these themes, how emotions work, how thoughts work, how to take control. We're going to explore meditation more deeply. You'll develop a much better theoretical background, a sort of understanding how your mind works and your emotions and the choices you make, and there'll be a lot more practice. So that is my offer to you. To take me up on it, email me at info@vaughngray.com. It's good for the next month. So I think I'm recording this on the 23rd of March. Class starts April 20th. So email me before the 20th. You're in the class. You're in it for free. It's my gift to you for going through this journey. If you don't take this class with me, I've got others that will be there in the future that explore this topic material, but there is an avalanche of this stuff out there, and it's becoming more common. And I promise you, I've been doing this health, fitness, and wellness work for over a decade now, and I've worked with lots of people, and I've actually been able to have a very high success rate. I'd say about 60% of the people I work with one-on-one really do get pretty extraordinary results, largely because they have a coach there working with them, so it's a lot easier to apply it. But the ones that keep those results after they stop working with me and become happy, they all do this work, everyone. I have literally, in my entire experience, I've coached hundreds and hundreds of people in six-month coaching programs, and I can remember one guy who didn't do any of this kind of work, got extraordinary results and kept them, and he was the happiest person I'd met before he started working with me. He was a deeply well-adjusted human being. So can't emphasize it enough, can't advocate it strongly enough. We're going to have our one more class next week where I'm going to sort of wrap things up. I'm going to wrap up all the body stuff. It's going to be a review of everything that we've talked about, and it's only going to have a little bit of this. And then in the wake of that class, I'm going to send out a PDF that covers everything. It's like a 22, 26-page PDF, and it has all the information you really need in summary form. And you can always go back and review this audio, but you'll have, you know, all the stuff, mindset, exercise, diet, sleep, supplements. It'll all be there for you in one integrated document. So you'll have all the resources you need. And my call to you is look at this as the beginning of a journey. You've heard something here that's interesting, something that makes you ask questions. You may disagree, you may want to argue, but you kind of get it. It's a little weird, this whole free will thing. Why can't I do what I want to do? Take the invitation. You want to get breakthrough results in your life. This course can be a beginning. It's only a beginning. And start exploring. So with that, I'm going to stop. If you have any questions, I would love to take them.
No, I don't have any.
No? Does this make sense? What we talked about?
Yeah, I like it.
Good. I'm glad. Well, for everyone who's out there on MP3, you can always mail in to me. I actually had some email questions, which I answered over email. I really appreciate that, guys. None of them were like broadcast of the group questions, but I did appreciate hearing from you. And our last class will be at the end of next week. Email me if you want to take me up on this free class that it's not free. It's a fee-based class, but for you guys, it's free. It starts April 20th. It's going to be really awesome. It's called Ending the Weight Loss Game. I think it's the best curriculum I've ever put together in my life. And if you would like to refer anyone you know in, friends or family who want to take it, I will get them a discount. I'll get them a discount coupon as well. So I look forward to hearing from you guys. I hope a few of you can make the call live for our final course. If not, I completely understand. And I bid all of you the best and really hope to hear from you this week because this is the most important class we've done. This is what brings it all together. This is where you can actually really begin to make a difference in your life is by applying the stuff that helps you make changes. And I will bid everyone good night and talk to you in a week.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.